All right, here we are, Mom and Teen Real Talk. So many things to discuss on Ginny and Georgia, because now we are seeing race come up. We are seeing Ginny realize and struggle that she went for that essay. She wanted to do well. She embraced slam poetry as her dad taught her. And not being treated equally. So she has to deal with that and face that, all of the conflict between Ginny and her mom trying to keep up the facade of everything being okay, while really her life is kind of a disaster in so many ways. And the mom trying to protect her kids from that. Just so many things to discuss, the friendship relationship. So Nikki, what should we talk about? Introduce yourself and
sure. Hi, Angie. My name's Dr. Nikki, and this is Mom and Teen Real Talk, and we are talking about Ginny and Georgia, episode 7 and 8. And Angie was saying that these episodes are so loaded. Each one could definitely be its own episode, but it starts off with Ginny's 16th birthday, and her mom had always done her birthday with her, expecting that Ginny would really want to be hanging out with her mother for her birthday. And this year she definitely didn't. So I don't know. Do you think people want to hang out with their moms for their 16th birthday? Do moms want to hang out with their kids? Are we holding on for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we have to look at. Our kids are becoming independent. 16 is really... you have a lot of independence at this point. In the United States, you might get your driver's license and be able to drive somewhere independently without your parents. So how much time do you spend with your parents? Do you carry on those traditions that you had when you were 7 years old? And what's that look like for the parent who might be feeling the loss or wanting to continue the younger child traditions and still have the same role in the child's life, and the kid wanting something different, wanting to be an adult and growing up? So we see everybody facing that, especially as Ginny asks, "Mom, can you just, I'm 16, can you trust me now?" She says, "Will you just trust me with the real stuff?" Because Georgia, the mom, keeps getting caught in her lies and keeps getting caught in her cover-ups and manipulation. And Ginny realizes now that her mom is lying about a lot of stuff, and she doesn't
appreciate
it. But
Georgia says something so interesting. She said, mm-hmm. there are some things you can't unsee. So mm-hmm. if she told her too much information, and still, the question is, what is too much for a 16-year-old? What's too much for a 7-year-old? What's too much for a 10-year-old? It's really, really hard to know. But she definitely thought that if Ginny knew all of the things that she felt like she needed to do in order to keep Ginny as safe as she could, or just to keep her at all, and you see that she marries that first guy because she was just about to lose Ginny and was not willing to do that, and got herself in that situation, and then figured out in the only way that Georgia could how to get herself out of that situation. And really, she had been surrounded by a ton of violence, a ton of abuse, mistrust. She landed in that situation as honestly as she could, while still mm-hmm. trying to be the best parent she can for Ginny. And none of us have a parental guidebook to figure out how to parent. And I think all of us could decide that we're doing the best that we can, and that we struggle at times to figure out what the best is. It was interesting to watch Georgia feel really hurt that Ginny didn't want to be with her anymore. It was almost like she felt like she wasn't cool anymore. She wasn't fun anymore. And Georgia puts a lot of stock in her being the cool, fun, good-looking, with it mom. Mm-hmm. And then when Ginny decided that she wanted to go and hang out over at Max's house, and so much is centered around drinking, even more so than other drugs, but really lots of alcohol in these situations. And it's really hard to keep yourself thinking when you're drinking. Oh, wait, that rhymes. Mm-hmm. I like that. But there's no way to do that. And when Georgia finds out, she ends up calling the police on Ginny and then letting Ginny be arrested. That was her punishment for feeling hurt. She was hurt that Ginny wanted to do something else and left. And she punished her by letting her be arrested.
Right. And Georgia has this really serious double standard of wanting Ginny to be honest with her. And she's presenting it as like, Jenny, I'm the cool mom. You can tell me. I know about the secret Instagram accounts. I know you're going to have sex, so I'm putting you on the pill. Like, I know what's up. She's saying it as if you can tell me and you can trust me. And she doesn't trust Jenny. She's also sneaking and lying and hiding everything from her daughter and then expecting that her daughter wouldn't sneak or lie or hide things. So Georgia's furious that she climbed out the window and they all snuck out and made, you know, versions of themselves, made fake like people in the bed to look like they were sleeping. And I think it's a little bit ridiculous if it's like that actions speak louder than words. I mean, Georgia is always manipulating things. And then we see Jenny use her mom's need to feel accepted and as the cool mom when she says, Mom, we can have one drink, right? We can have one toast. Nothing will go wrong. And she knows the way to appeal to her mom is by saying, you're the cool mom. You'll let us do it. And so our kids are smart and they know who we are and they're observing probably more than we think they are. So it's,
and they know where our struggles are, that's for sure. But Ginny doesn't feel like she could have told Georgia that she was going to go to Max's house and have her own party. So the truth is that she couldn't tell Georgia everything, even though Georgia might want her to, because Georgia actually couldn't have handled that, whether she said she would or not. And maybe she wanted her feelings. Maybe she wanted to keep her feeling like she still was okay with her hanging out at her party and now she was going to sleep.
I don't know if it's that, or also it could just be Jenny's so furious at her mom keeping things from her and always being sneaky that Jenny's like, fine, well, I'll do it too. Like maybe Jenny could have said like, look, Mom, we're all going over to Max's house. There's a party tonight. Georgia has let her go to late night parties and she knows there's drinking there. I don't know why Georgia would say this time you're not allowed to go.
I think it was because it was her birthday and Georgia had these plans. So Georgia had an idea about what she wanted to do with Ginny and her friends. And she created a really fun party. Ginny talks about that a lot, that Georgia had always made birthday special. And this was important to Georgia. I think that unless we can hear and handle whatever feelings are coming at us from our kids, it's going to be hard for them to tell us what it is they're really doing or not. And I don't think that Georgia could have handled that Ginny wanted to go out and do her own thing and leave Georgia in the dust for her 16th birthday.
And then once they go out, I mean, I thought it was kind of funny the way that they made the plan to lose their virginity and then that didn't happen. You know, we all just make plans in our lives, like this is how it can go. It'll go this way. We'll do it this way. But then when things happen in reality, it might not go that way. This is just life. So I thought they kind of showed the show, you know, gave us a window into that where it's a little funny, like the things that we think we're going to do as adults, as teenagers, and the plans we make up in our mind, and then it might not really happen that way. And
I think we have to be ready to change it, because if you make a decision to lose your virginity together for whatever reason, you feel like you want to do it at that moment, and the timing just doesn't feel right, or the situation has changed, or maybe you feel bad about it, or you've changed your mind, that doesn't mean anything's wrong. And I feel like there's so many times when I was that age that I felt like if I had somehow said to myself or to somebody else I was going to do something, that I was almost obligated to continue to do it, and almost put myself and whatever my feelings were aside to just keep doing what it was that I said I was going to do. I don't know if you've had that experience before or not.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes I still, as an adult, sometimes I find myself in a situation where I think like, I planned it this way. I've got to stay committed to my plan. And I'm not really, I have to remember and pull back for a minute to think, wait, I could do things differently. If it's, if I don't want to do this right now that I'm looking at it, maybe I can change my plan a little bit, which I think is a good reminder to teenagers, especially to remember. To check in with your feelings when something's not right in that moment, or you're getting some kind of sense of like, I don't know if I want to make this decision, that listen to yourself, right? Step back. Do you have to make this decision right now? Can you hold off on that?
I think we get to change the decision. What was the other thing you were going to say? Yeah.
Well, and then also in the, I liked that the next episode, we just saw that, that kind of happy love scene between Max and her girlfriend that just unfolded as they were studying and nothing had been planned. And it was just this genuine moment of like, I really love and appreciate and adore you. And then we saw them kind of get together, and then later, Max said she had sex. So I guess that was their moment.
Yeah. And that happened organically and
yes,
relaxedly. And I think that's a great way to decide, or at least feel good doing something.
Yeah. Without pressure.
I bad. Like, I think about that a lot. You get to decide if something makes sense based on how you're feeling related to it. Now, sometimes maybe you don't care about something, and so then your feeling is going to be neutral about whatever's going on, and maybe that's okay. But if your feeling is guilt, shame, obligation, whatever it is, nervousness, anxiety, you have to think about what you're doing and whether that makes sense or not, because that doesn't seem like a really wonderful way to do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I thought the other big issue when we got to episode 8 was this this poetry essay, and you can it was such a such an important thing for Ginny, and she really is kind of trying to discover herself. It's her 16th birthday. She's figuring out who she is. Her dad is back in her life. He's always been an important figure in her life. I don't think he hasn't been physically present the whole time, but as a role model and someone who's connecting her with her roots, and especially like her Black, her African-American, you know, the like piece of her heritage, I guess he wants to connect her with that and remind her, you're not one of these snotty Wellsbury people who's just grown up inside this bubble. There's more to you than this. And she uses that experience to express herself through this essay. It all seems really awesome. And then when the teacher says, he says, your submission was too unconventional, so you don't win. And your boyfriend wins, Hunter, who's more traditional. And then as Hunter describes it, he says, I have to live within my Taiwanese culture, and it's keep my head down and do what I need. I'm also like shackled with these expectations of my family and my heritage, but in a different way. I thought,
yeah, he called it the oppression Olympics. And I love that,
yes,
where each person was kind of stating where they had been victimized and oppressed more, where mm-hmm. Black women are categorized in a certain way, where him as an Asian or Taiwanese guy had to fit into a certain box, where both of them being mixed heritage actually don't feel like they fit in anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting scene, but they were pretty pissed at each other. And we could say that the fact that she didn't win it was an effect of racism, but it is the racism that keeps everything in check. the ones where you're following the rules in a certain way. And even though she didn't follow the rules, and so the teacher could possibly say, well, you didn't follow the rules, and so that was too unconventional to win, that is a form of racism where people have to fit into a specific kind of box. I thought that was a really interesting conversation between the both of them.
Yeah, I thought so too. And it's like they're both trying to hurt each other and yeah, fight and compete with their struggles. Hunter realizes that and says it out loud and sees what they're doing to each other. And both of them have tears in their eyes and it's painful and they feel hurt. I mean, I thought that was a powerful scene. I don't know what that says about relationships, but that felt like honest and they were both sharing their struggles genuinely. And then Abby is also in this relationship struggle where she's feeling abandoned. She, as a friend, she's had a few friends her whole life. It seems like they've had close friendships and she's trusted them. And then here she is really, really struggling. And every time she reaches out, everyone's too busy to hang out with her and she feels completely abandoned and alone.
Well, I thought that was interesting because I think up to that point where she said, whatever that restaurant's called, SOS, she wasn't very specific about what she wanted from them. And everybody was kind of going through their own stuff. So unless she says, and I think that's an interesting lesson for us, unless we say, listen, I need you. Can we cordon off this time because it's really important and I need to like ground myself in some way with these particular friendships? Because the second she said, SOS, meet me at the Bluebird, what was it called, that restaurant? Or
yeah, Blue something.
Blue something. Farm. Blue Farm, something like that. Meet me there. They were all there. Nobody didn't show up there. But I think she was, it's that idea about hoping that somebody will read our minds about how difficult something is. Other people didn't even know that her parents were getting a divorce. And that her father had moved out. That seemed to be something that they all had to figure out from each other. That's why Abby's acting so weird. That's why it got so hard. So do we get to be very direct about the hard things that are going on and not ask other people that we love to read our minds and then set them up for tremendous disappointment so that we can once again be discouraged that we're alone, especially with her parents leaving or whatever it is? It's a real setup for us where we decide something. Yeah.
And I think teenagers and adults both, but especially for teenagers, I see this where, especially over text messaging and the way that we communicate, leaving someone on read has somehow become, it's like, I don't care about you. Like I'm cutting you off. It has become so deliberate where in my world as an adult, if somebody doesn't reply to my text for 4 days, I don't even think about it. I don't care. I don't reply to people's texts for 4 days or 2 weeks. I just assume somebody got busy. But in the, like, I think in the younger generation, it's just so expected that people have access to their phones. If you don't reply, it seems really like a big deal. Like I'm seriously ignoring you. And so any small message of like, hey, what's up? Or how's it going? Anything that Abby does to reach out where anyone says like, I'm busy or I can't meet you, that already feels like, wow, you're just abandoning me completely. Abby, as you said, she was not saying I need help or someone please reach out, help me. When she does, they're all there for her. But when she just says like, hey, want to get together, and people don't follow up on that, she already feels the same sting as if she said like, I need you guys, and they didn't respond.
Right, totally. But I do think the expectation is that people have their phone available and that they respond. And if it's important enough to them, they will respond. So I think you could decide to make it mean that I'm not quite as important as something else. And we have no idea why things are important or not important. I've been really kind of playing with this idea about not making something a problem. So we could decide that somebody not answering our text right away is a particular kind of problem. And we can decide what we make it mean. They don't love us enough. they don't care about us enough to actually get in touch with us. Or we could make a decision to make it mean something else. Like, oh, they're really busy, or there might be something else in front of them, and not necessarily throw away the friendship or create the problem where the problem isn't necessarily there. Now, there might be a problem or there might not. I don't know, but we don't know what the problem is. And so I think that us figuring out to not make something a problem that isn't quite a problem yet is actually a big deal for us to all figure out how to do. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I don't know what you think of that.
Yeah, exactly. So if we're Abby in this situation, and you feel like my friends don't care about me, everyone's abandoned me, I'm having the hardest week of my life and no one cares, that's a terrible feeling to have. And if Abby could just remind herself, maybe my friends are going through stuff too right now. I'm having the hardest week of my life and my friends are might be preoccupied. We see, because we see that Ginny walks in on Zion and Georgia together, she's dealing with a really hard time. She just had that fight with Hunter. I mean, she's not abandoning Abby, but she really is having some serious struggles that she's facing and hurting. And Abby doesn't know that. Abby's not thinking maybe Ginny is having a serious struggle herself right now. If Abby's only thinking everyone abandoned me, that's really painful. So I like what you said, just deciding, if Abby could decide, maybe my friends have serious struggles too, I'm going to reach out to them and say, SOS, I want to talk to you guys. And then she
doesn't even check in with them. Are you guys okay? What's going on? This isn't like you. There's so many ways to do this, but once we decide what we make it mean, and if it's very fixed, it's really hard to switch that there could be another possibility about what's going on. And I think that that's the one thing that we have some agency over, deciding what might be going on or what might not be going on, that we get to think what we want to think related to what's going on with everybody else around us. And I think it's very hopeful because it leaves all the possibilities there.
And when Abby sat down on the, at the table, she said everything. She said, there is no Meng. You have abandoned me. She had decided already in her mind how it was. And then we see it wasn't that way at all. All four of them are there for each other. Everyone immediately, they smack each other, then they laugh, and everyone's holding hands and forgiving. They're right back in their friend. That friendship was there the whole time, but Abby had decided, she felt abandoned, and then she decided it was true. There is no Meng. Everyone has abandoned me. I have no friends. I have no one I can trust. It wasn't true. It was just what she was thinking. So that's a good reminder for all of us to remember that whatever we're thinking, there might be another side to the story.
I kind of like the fact that they were slapping each other and realizing in some ways how ridiculous it all was. Like, it could have turned into a big fight, but it was just this outburst of emotion and whatever it was that they were feeling. And then also a realization, it's almost like snap out of it or whatever. But there's some realization that they came to feel that probably words couldn't have expressed in quite the same way. I thought that was interesting because girls tend to not hit each other very much or just punch it out, but things get really quiet and manipulative and somewhat mean-spirited and backstabbing. And I almost wish that people would just smack each other every once in a while, not in the, do you know what I mean though? Like, be like, let's do a wrestling match or something like that. Like, you know, let's wrestle this one out. Something about that. What did you think about her parents sleeping together and her finding it? She knows because she's obviously seen this cycle before. They do really love each other, Zion and Georgia. Zion is definitely the one person that Georgia has not tried to kill, at least. So that's really a positive.
Oh my gosh.
I think this is already good, you know, and allows them to come back in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, what we can see clearly is that Ginny's parent, both of them love Ginny, like with their whole heart, and care about her and want to support her and want to give her a good life. The intentions are there. It, like you and I don't see eye to eye on the Georgia thing, right? I think there's a thousand choices Georgia had available to her and options to actually provide a safer life, a more stable life, and all of that. And I think her relationship with Zion is a good option. He is a strong person. Why can't they figure out some system of being together and staying together? They care about each other. They love each other. I'm sure we will figure out more and see more in their backstory.
I think he's a rolling stone. He doesn't want to stay still.
Right. But Georgia can live in a house and raise the kids. And if he wants to travel 6 months a year, he can travel. These are not impossible things to overcome, right?
I don't think that she wants that relationship, though. I mean, I can't get in the mind, obviously, of the writers of Ginny and Georgia or how they're going to play her out. But the idea is that she probably wants. I mean, she picked a guy like Paul. Paul is.
Well, that's what I think the problem is. She has this desire. Like, Willsbury is a good place. I need to be this kind of mom who looks like this and has a house that looks like this. And she's putting that before what is the safest and best and most healthy and whole relationship that I can create within my family. I think she puts the picture of some kind of idealized whatever and decides that it's worth murder and
Wouldn't be the first person or the last person to do that. That's for sure. Where people are really trying to, I think the whole community there is trying to fit into a certain mold, and there's a lot of dysfunction going on all over the place. So yeah. I think we've been set up to think that mold is the way we're going to find happiness and some peace. Now, Ginny mm-hmm. really likes it there because finally she's met a group of people that think it's good to be smart and they seem to have some kind of direction. And I like her friends. I really, really do. And they are her first friends. So in some ways, I think Georgia had some good instincts about bringing her to Willsbury. Now, she is a person of color in a town with very few people of color. And I think that's hard for her to negotiate because Georgia really doesn't think about that or kind of work on that with Ginny. But that's what Zion came back for, which is really great, I think, for Ginny to have a balanced perspective. I do like Paul a lot. And I was really glad back to episode 7 that he went and got Ginny out of jail. And I was really glad that he notices what a good sister is and that she is doing the best that she can, given whatever mm-hmm. the struggles are. So I am definitely a Paul fan. He's a bit vanilla-y, not a lot going on, but I think he's going to surprise us. I think he's going to be able to stick in there and handle things better than we imagine he could.
Yeah, I don't care about Paul at all. I would choose Zion over Paul. He's just like a pointless character to me. And like a stepping stone. It's Georgia's vision of what she wants, and Paul just fits into this. Like, if I'm married to a mayor and he is stable and reliable, then I have this house and this life. I think she's choosing that over what's good for her kids or her or health or wellness or anything. One thing though, I did like going back to the smacking and then laughing, was like an expression of emotions. Whenever we're watching these teen shows and I'm looking for like expressing emotion, where is that coming up? And can we show people and teenagers that it's okay to express emotion? So when they're like crying and screaming, I thought it was great that in that scene, like you said, they smack each other. They just end up laughing. Sometimes you're so overwhelmed with emotion and you're so upset and so hurt. And then you just have to laugh. But then we see emotion again when she walks in and sees her parents together. Ginny's clearly been through this cycle. She knows this is a disaster. This is a bombshell. Now it's going to explode our life again. My mom has established us in Willsbury and said, like, we're going to be here. We're going to be permanent. Paul is my future. And now here she is in bed with Zion. So Ginny knows, okay, this is another destructive piece of my life. So she slams the door. We see her in the exact same position where she self-harmed before. And she just is crying. She starts laughing. And I thought that does capture kind of when you're so overwhelmed with emotion, you don't even know how to feel. It's so absurd and ridiculous that you're like, oh, and my mom is doing this again. She has to laugh. But she's so hurt and upset by it. She's miserable. All of these emotions just come at once. You see her just grab that lighter, right? And she goes to self-harm. This is what I really, really hate and despise about this show, where I realize that self-harm is a pervasive issue. I'm talking to lots of clients who are struggling with this, but the way that it is portrayed on the show to me is way too glamorous. When she says the words, I don't matter, I never did, I don't have a voice, and that is why I have to let my scream out through hurting myself, I think the message is so loud and clear to anyone watching. It is like, if you also relate to Ginny, if you feel that you don't have a voice, that you feel that you don't matter, which is a feeling that a lot of teenagers face, it's saying like, here, grab the lighter and self-harm. And then there's one little note at the end of the script that says, if you self-harm, reach out to this website.
Right. That's so interesting that everything about it.
She has this perfect life, these perfect friends. She has great friends. She has perfect clothes. She has guys in love with her. Someone's crawling in her window. Like, her life doesn't look so, you know, it doesn't look bad enough and ugly enough.
Not at the moment, that's for sure. But, you know, there is that internal angst and whatever the feelings are that she still hasn't really worked on and worked through. So that idea about when you don't have a voice, you have to scream somehow. Ginny has not had a lot of choice about whatever is going on in her life or where she's been taken or when she's moved or mostly everything, the men in her mom's life, she hasn't. And so she really hasn't had a voice. And even though this is probably one of the better moments in Ginny's life, Ginny still brings herself to the table, and she can also be overwrought with whatever triggers will happen that will bring her back to the previous life, which obviously her mom sleeping with her dad is one of. But I really appreciate what you're saying, that you're feeling like it's glamorizing it somehow, that if you're having a problem with this, then you should do this because this is what Ginny does and that works for her. I guess I don't see it really working for her. I think it's pretty destructive, and I can tell that through that, but I appreciate what you're saying too, that it's not. It would be nice to have a clearer message at the end of the episode, like that there is a better way to do this. And if you're self-harming and want to figure out a better way where you won't get hurt, then get in touch with us. So there probably could be a clearer message, but you're right. This is entertainment and people love Ginny and Georgia, which I'm always amazed at how many people are watching this.
Now that you and I are doing the podcast, I'm asking my kids. And so my daughter said she quit watching after the tap dance. She was like, this was so ridiculous. I can't stand it. And then my older daughter too, she said, wait, isn't that show like really problematic? Like, isn't it? And so she's 21, just turned 22 last week. So she said, like, I think that is not a great show. So maybe the message is out there that this is entertainment, but maybe super cringy and bad acting and kind of awful. I hope.
Right. But I think I like the fact that your daughter said, isn't this problematic? And my daughter definitely knows it's problematic and she still finds it entertaining. Uh-huh. But I don't know very many people who think like, let me give that a try, or at least the ones I speak to, you know,
and that's, I feel like me watching it as a 45-year-old looking at this, I'm seeing that. But if I picture any 14-year-old watching it, and when I think about everyone, the shows that I grew up with, right, like Eating Disorder seemed kind of like, oh, popular girls have eating disorders, right? Like when in the 80s, anorexia and bulimia was kind of a big theme on shows and Degrassi and 90210 and whatever. The messaging was more, the underlying message was more like, this is how my generation, people like me at my school, handle things, was kind of like that. So I think
the friends were kind of boosting each other with it or whatever society was doing, but I definitely didn't get the sense from the show that that's what I wanted to do. Like that was the way for me to deal with it. But that's why we're talking about this, because mm-hmm. these shows can get confusing and some people could look at them in specific ways. And if you're watching the shows with your kids, and most of the people I'm speaking to are, or if you haven't started watching with them and want to get involved in the conversation, then you at least get to hear what's going on in their brains and yeah. figure out, is this something that needs a little bit more attention? They're watching it anyway, and we're generally watching some things together. So these are perfect opportunities to have the conversations about other more productive, more just better ways to deal with hard feelings and how to do that. And I think that if we can get in touch with our own hard feelings and have these conversations and be able to listen a certain way, then we'll get lots of bits of information that will be so useful to really help people grow into the kind of life and person they want to be. And that's really what we want for our kids.
Yeah. And we just want our kids to talk to us too, right? It's like, yeah. then they get a sense of like, okay, my parent is talking to me. My parent is supportive. My parent wants to know what's happening in my life. My parent wants to talk about friendships and relationships and how do you handle big emotions? Just the knowing that even if I don't say the perfect words or we don't have this perfect conversation, my parent's interested and cares and is here to have the talks.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And there's so many ways to do that, you know, ways in which we might not have them feel like they're so incredibly judged or not, you know, really be able to listen, but also be able to hear the information. Because I know for a lot of parents, they want their kids to talk to them, but they're also really scared about the kind of information that they're going to get. And so mm-hmm. we'll have to really shore ourselves up to be able to handle any information without freaking out or reacting. And maybe some things we'll freak out and react about, and then we just get to work on it, but to always keep coming back and really trying to figure out how to be present and, you know, and guide without a lot of criticism and judgment.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. That's what we're here for. So that's
yeah. Get in touch with us.
Oh my God. Thanks for listening and being part of this conversation.
Yeah, this is really important stuff. So if you want to get in touch with us, you could go to the show notes and figure out how to work with me or Angie and really have your first great conversation. And we're going to figure out how to get more information, more ability to listen. I have a book out, which is on every platform imaginable, that has made a huge difference in people trying to really talk and listen to their kids. And it's all there. So
get the, say the title of your book so people can find it.
It's called Shut Up and Act Dumb, A Parent's yeah. Guide to Staying Close and Connected to Your Teens and Tweens. And when I say act dumb and when I say shut up, I don't mean that we're not talking ever. We're not assuming that we know everything that is going on in our young person's brain. And in some ways, we almost have to act as if we have no idea what's going on in their brains and that we really want to know, that we're really curious because we don't understand and we want to understand. So that is the purpose, and lots of very, very useful and helpful tips and ways in which to do things that I think could really change things almost immediately.
Yes.
Yeah.
So good. Everyone should read Shut Up and Act Dumb and keep listening, and talk to your kids.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
If you want to really learn how to have the most meaningful, fun, connected conversations with your teenagers, get in touch with us and see if it makes sense to work together. You will stop future generational trauma, as well as really decrease the incidence of high-risk behaviors just by your strong and close connections. All right, speak to you soon.